It's so bad. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, I understand now how people drop out 96 miles into 100 mile.
Diz Runs Radio episode 468 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, two things before we get started with today's episode. One, just want to let you know that this episode is sponsored by Audible. So if you haven't checked out Audible before, you can get a free 30-day trial, a free download book of your choice that you get to keep whether you maintain, you know, a membership in Audible or not, whether you cancel during the trial period or not, simply by going to dizruns.com/audible. You know, once you get there, download whatever book you want. There's plenty of great running books. There's plenty of great other books, fiction, history, whatever you're interested in. Get yourself a book and listen to it, enjoy it, and let me know what you think. And also let me know what book you get, because I'm always looking for books to add to my queue. I really appreciate my Audible subscription. It's actually something I'm looking forward to planning on expanding. Right now I'm on the level of getting one free book a month, which is, you know, your subscription covers one book a month, but I might up that a little bit because I really enjoy listening to audiobooks on a regular basis. But again, dizruns.com/audible. Check that out. The other thing that I just want to call your attention to real quick, just in case this is something that would impact you, there are a few kind of curse words in this episode. So a couple of F-bombs, a couple of more minor swear words. But if you have kids in the car or whatever, if that doesn't sit well with you, if kind of some language doesn't sit well with you, this may not be the episode for you. It's not gratuitous. It's not over the top, but there are a few words to be careful for. So just want to let you know with all that before we get started. And now go ahead and enjoy today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today I'm reconnecting with Nora Bird, who was first on the show way back in episode 206, which was back in January of 2016. So it's been a minute. When we chatted that a couple hundred episodes ago, we talked about how Nora had basically kind of, when she got into running, dove in head first and really, you know, came along pretty quickly. Talked about her experience at running Boston in 2013 and some of the emotions that obviously you can imagine were probably part of that experience. And even beyond that, still kind of has a little place in her heart for obvious reasons. We talked about the fact that she entered the Leadville Lottery on a whim and was selected. And we talked, you know, leading up to that race. And we also talked about her love of baked goods and getting into baking at that time. So, that was then. This is now, and things have definitely changed a little bit since then. So I'm looking forward to catching up with her today and talking a bit about how things have changed for her and running in life and all that good stuff as well. So without any further ado, it is my pleasure to welcome my friend, Miss Nora Bird, back to the show. Thanks for coming back and joining us again, Nora.
Absolutely. I'm excited to talk about all the new things.
Ah, good, good. And guys, if you want to check out Nora's website, it's teambirdtraining.com is the website. Instagram, Twitter, connect with her there if you haven't done so already. The handle is at NCMB2323. So NCMB2323. Same handle both places, and we'll have the links to those things and the website, the social media handles, anything else we talk about that makes sense to link to. They'll be on the show notes for this episode, which is dizruns.com/468. And if you missed the first chat, you can obviously find it, like I said, it's episode 206, so dizruns.com/206. But if you want to find it in your podcast app, you probably won't be able to find that one, but we re-ran that episode not too long ago as a best of episode, because it really was a good one. I would encourage you to check it out. And that's dizruns.com/434. So if you're scrolling through your podcast app looking for it, not too long ago, earlier, I guess it was the end of last year or earlier. No, sometime this summer when I was on vacation this summer, we ran it. So anyway, long-winded way of saying it, 434, you can find it as a best of episode and you can get up to speed there with all of the past things. And now we'll bring you up to speed for now. So Nora, the way we start off the show, is to always ask the same question as, what is your favorite distance to race and why? And because we talk regularly, for those that aren't aware, we're part of a mastermind group. We talk about just about every week, depending on unless life gets in the way. But so I know, I'm going to guess that your answer to this question has changed in the year, almost 2 years that it's been since we've talked. So I'm going to ask it again, and let's see what the answer is this time. So there we go. That's the setup. What is your favorite distance to race and why at this point of your life?
Well, you know, there still is a pretty special spot in my heart, I guess, for the 50-mile distance. But, you know, the 100-mile is really, you know, growing on me. Clearly, there's just so many things that can happen. And I think it's probably less likely for you to ever have like a perfect race in 100-mile. I mean, it's happened. We have some, like, you know, we know some elite people who can, right, you know, kind of say that, you know, but they've also raced like their entire lives or have been racing 100-mile or ultras for a really long time. So I feel like there's always, even if you ran the same course every single year and that's the only 100-mile you did, like, I feel like you're always going to experience something new or different every time. And it's a different challenge. And I think that that's exciting to kind of figure out how to deal with those challenges.
Yeah. And I mean, shoot, if you're talking about a trail race in general, like, you know, it's always going to change just from the conditions. So even though it's the same course, this, you know, same whatever, like if the weather's different one, if it rained one year, if it didn't rain one year, if it's, you know, all of the factors that play into it. When you said that, you know, the fact that, at 100 miles, it's almost impossible to have a perfect race. Hear me sitting in Central Florida would love to run a perfect race no matter what the distance. And for that to be, you know, something that maybe you kind of enjoy about it, that it is a struggle. Do you really look forward to those struggles over the course of whatever the distance? But especially the longer you go, the more likely you are to have those struggles at some point along the way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it takes a special person to want to run ultras repeatedly and, you know, like, do that to ourselves, because they're not easy and they're not, you know, they're not pretty. And I think, you know, I said it before, like, you just have to be, you have to have this slightly like masochistic side to you. You know, you have to really enjoy that pain and suffering. And, you know, I think it's pretty much the ultimate problem solving avenue.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Not that I know. I mean, my one ultra experience of a piddly little 30-something miles, like, you know, it's not even a third of your those 100-mile races. But, you know, there is always going to be problems that come up and things like that. And would love to get into those a little bit more, maybe in just a second. But just to backtrack just a hair, you know, when we first talked, you were mostly a roadrunner. You know, and that was even what you said. You know, you even qualified. I don't know if you remember, but I went back and listened to the episode today just to refresh from where we were then to where we are now. You know, that my favorite distance to race is 50 miles on the road. Like, that was, like, you qualified, not just 50 miles, but it has to be on the road to be your favorite distance to race. And now, you know, I mean, it's not that you don't ever run on the road, but it seems like you're getting more and more into the trails. What's been that? What has that transition or that change kind of been like for you? And am I missing something, or do you kind of almost enjoy maybe the trails now more than the road a little bit?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Like, and I don't mean to sound like, ooh, I hate the trails, because that's not it. I do love the trails. And, you know, if I lived somewhere where there were beautiful trails more accessibly, I think that I could probably transition fully to a trail runner. I mean, I have to drive 45 minutes in any direction to get to some sort of trail. Mm-hmm. And then it's still like you have to repeat loops or go over the path more than once, you know, to get something that's worthwhile for like training distance. I can't even tell you how happy I am when we are on a trail and we hit a road section. Like, I get so excited. Like, I mean, even my pacers for this last one were just like, what? And I was just like, that's like some of my strongest running. It's some of my strongest. I really like it. And I don't know. I can't explain. I don't know. And it's not that I don't like the trail. I really do like the trail also, because it's just different in some way. I mean, I'm happy also on the trail. It's just that I'm just slightly more happy when I hit a road section in the trail.
Gotcha. No, I get that. And I almost want, you know, hearing you say that, I almost wonder if it's as much, I mean, you know, just kind of like, because that's what you're more used to. I mean, you know, even really, you've only been doing much for trail running. And I mean, just, you know, even since just when we talked, you know, last time for the podcast, whenever it was in January of a year ago. So, you know, you've still got much more experience, much more time on the roads. And then, you know, like you said, if you're going to drive 45 minutes to get to a trail, like, you know, you're not going to do that every day. So yeah, you're going to be more comfortable probably on the road than anything else.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing down here for me. Like I get to the trail once in a while. I don't have to go 45 minutes to get there, but it's still a short loop. So you're gonna loop it several times if you're gonna run very far. And it's not the most exciting. You know, it's not the Rockies. It's not the Appalachians. It's not somewhere where there's where I think I would be the same way, where I'd be much more of a trail runner if I had those opportunities, you know, real mm-hmm. real well at hand instead of having to really seek them out once in a while.
Yeah.
So we can't kind of gloss over the fact that you know. When we talked last time, you'd signed up for Leadville, entered the lottery, first time on a whim, like, you know, the attitude, I laughed then and I laugh now, was like, you know what, let's see what happens, like whatever, we'll see. And sure enough, you get picked, and so you go out there to run the race, which was, I believe, the first 100-miler, the first big trail race that you'd done, certainly the first anything at elevation. So how was that whole experience, and how did that... Yeah, I know that it went well, but how was that experience for you, that for being that first time at all of these things, at one of the biggest and baddest and toughest races that we have here in the United States?
Yeah, so it definitely was my first 100-miler. I had done one trail half, I think, when I very first started running, so probably like 5 years prior to that. And I had just done a 50-mile trail run over the summer leading up as like a tune-up race, a practice race with my pacer leading up to Leadville. So really I hadn't done much on the trail at all until I got there. And, you know, I'm glad that I did a week of training in Durango beforehand, because I had never even really been out west. I had never really seen the mountains. I had no idea what it was even going to be like. And being able to appreciate the beauty and getting out there and really seeing like how high 13,000 feet really is, and like how treacherous, you know, it can be, especially if you're not accustomed to it, or, you know, experiencing scree for the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Leadville doesn't really have any of that, but I mean, just kind of knowing what that was like and just experiencing actually climbing for 4 miles at a time, because, you know, you get like 10 minutes here or something like that, unless you're on a treadmill, like you just don't have a steep, difficult climb for that long. You just can't prepare yourself for that. So, I mean, the atmosphere there is really great during that race. I mean, they have a lot of support. They have a lot of people. It's kind of a big hoopla. It was definitely my first time being on my feet and racing for more than, you know, 10 hours. And it ended up being like 28. So, you know, just there's a whole lot that comes with that, I guess. You know, it wasn't, it was a little emotional, I guess, at the halfway. But, you know, there were some hard parts for it. For sure. Most of it was, I felt like I was racing the clock when I wasn't, you know, I was racing my clock that I set on myself, like my pace, but not the cutoffs. But I felt like that. I was really stressed out about that because I really hate being late. I really don't want to be behind schedule, even though I was an hour and a half ahead of my schedule for almost the entire race. I mean, I was on pace for, you know, between a 24 and 25 hour race, and then my feet just kind of gave up on me, so that, you know, those last 20 miles were pretty much walking, which is not something you want to do.
Right. At that point, you want to get the damn thing over with as quickly as possible, and walking isn't getting you there as fast as you want to be.
Right, exactly. And then when you see the sun come up for the second time, you're like, oh my god.
Oh goodness. I'd love to dive into that a little bit more. And I don't think this is a conversation that we've ever even had, you know, in some of our weekly calls and things like that. You know, like you said, this was the first time you'd been on your feet and racing for more than, you know, 10, 11 hours, whatever, however long it, you know, the longest, 50 mile ish race had been to that point. And you know, to take it back even one step farther, you know, earlier you said you love the challenges, the problems, the struggles that kind of go with these really long races. What was that first time like of going, that much farther, that much into the unknown, like for you? Because, you know, for me, for somebody who mostly runs marathons and you know, has dabbled slightly into the short ultra distance world, you know, I mean, when you train for those type of races, what are you talking about? 5-6 miles, maybe at the most, that are kind of unexplored territory for you, as far as, you know, you train up to 20 miles or 22 miles, something like that, and then you run your marathon or your 50K. For you, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 50 miles farther. I mean, what? I can't even think of a better way of asking the question other than what was that like for your you know, doing that much unexplored territory, you know, the first time?
You know, I kind of over prepared, I guess. You know, I had heard a lot of stories about people falling asleep while running or not getting enough sleep ahead of time or enough rest. So I really prepared myself for that because I was like, well, that's something easy that I can control that I'm not going to let be, you know, my downfall, basically. And so I slept like as much as I could that whole day before, you know, getting it still at least like 8 to 9 hours, if not sleep, but rest, you know, sleeping in between like the pre-race meeting and, you know, getting drop bags and preparing food and stuff. So I prepared myself that way. And that, you know, with Leadville, it's an out and back course. You're basically doing 50 miles out and then you're turning around. So basically you have a huge ass climb, the biggest climb in the race, basically coming from Twin Lakes to Winfield or to Hopeless. And, you know, you're going from 9,000 to 13,000 ish feet and, you know, and then you get to go down and then, turn around and climb back up and go down, you know? So like, I remember getting to the halfway point, which is 50 miles, and feeling just kind of like, okay, I felt defeated. I felt like I was going to miss the cutoff. I felt really stressed out. I mean, and so it had been about 12 hours at that time. So if I had kept that pace up, you know, it would have been a, you know, a sub 24 hour race. And I remember it was a low spot. I cried. And I remember asking my husband, like, will you be disappointed if I get pulled, if I can't make it? And, you know, I remember like my pacer, who's like, you know, a good friend of mine. I just remember kind of looking at her. She's just like, I don't know what to do. Like, what? I don't know how to help this, you know, because you're just sort of just so exhausted. You don't know what you want to eat. You don't know what you want to do. You just are kind of like a zombie. You're just like standing there, just kind of like, I don't even know how to make words right now, you know, and just cause, and then just thinking like, okay, now I have to turn around and do this again. So, but as soon as I turned around, I had in training, we had been out there for over a week ahead of time at that point, and I had climbed that climb from Winfield up. So I knew what to expect. I knew what was coming, and it wasn't so bad. So like I kind of like as soon as I got moving and I got my pacer and I got some food, it was okay. And my spirits were pretty good for a while until my feet started to hurt.
Right.
And that was probably mile like 70-ish. 65-70. And I think maybe it wasn't 20 miles. I think maybe I couldn't run the last like 13, because I guess it was from like May Queen in. But that really sucked a lot. Those last 4 miles, I don't know if you know, but anybody who has run that course, like the boulevard of like broken dreams is awful. Like it's so bad. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, I understand now how people drop out 96 miles into 100 mile. Like you think about that and you're like, oh my God, why wouldn't you just keep going? It's only 4 miles. You've went so far. I understand. I really know now, like it can almost just be too much, like to keep going. It just sort of was like, it's like a false summit. And then it just like keeps going up and keeps going up and you can't run, you know, cause it's already uphill and it just sucks a lot.
So yeah. I was going to ask, but maybe you just kind of explained it, but like for those of us that aren't real familiar with, you know, actually seeing the course and ever having been there, maybe haven't done that much research in it. What makes that last stretch so much? Is it just because it is a little bit of uphill the whole way and you never know where the end is, or is there something more to it?
Well, it's that, and it's a wide, like gravel road. So
well, that should
like,
be right up your alley, shouldn't it? Like it's like a road.
Well, kind of, but
except
I mean,
at mile 96, it's a little different.
Yes. And it's an incline and you can hear the people cheering. Like this is where you start to see like spectators like straggling here and there. The sun is like coming up, you know, it's like hot already again. And you can hear and, you know, like from the start, which was, you know, 20 plus hours ago, like it doesn't seem like that long when you started, because you start in the dark and you're going downhill. Mm-hmm. You're like, this is not that long. And then you're climbing and you're like, oh my God, when does it end? And you're just like, you get to the top and you're like, it just keeps going. And you know that it turns to the left and you just like hear the finish and you hear everybody and you're like, where the F is it? Like, it just, it's like taunting you the entire time. Like, it's like the longest 4 miles. And if you're walking, you know, that's over an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing like maybe 3 miles an hour. And then you get onto the road after you take a left and then you take a right and it's like asphalt, but then it's kind of a downhill. And then there's a little uphill again before you get to the finish. And it's probably a mile to the finish, like from that road. And you, but you can see it and it's just like taunting you the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you're talking about that, and especially that, you know, like reaffirming that, you know, the out and back. So you did this once already, but it didn't seem like that like it was that bad. I mean, I feel like I've been there before on other races where you know, it's a, whether it's a half marathon, whatever, where it is an out and back. And it's like you get to that one point and you're like, God, yeah, we're almost there, but it never is as short as it seems. And then, you know, just multiply that out by, you know, being the fact that you're 96 miles deep, you're 24, 25, 26 hours, 27 hours, whatever the case might be, into running. And yeah, I can maybe sort of start to figure out why, you know, why there's been folks that, you know, just say, you know what, the hell with it and be done with it at that point, even though, you know, in theory, you're so close. But yeah, that is pretty challenging at that point, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So since Leadville, you know, this year, here in 2017, you've done Vermont, you've done Wasatch. Obviously, different courses, different challenges, different struggles. You know, it's hard enough to compare one road marathon or one road anything to another of the same distance, but certainly on the trails and at ultra distances, you know, I've learned a lot. I learned enough, even though I haven't run many of those races, to know that you can't compare 100 miler to 100 mile. Like, you can't even necessarily compare 100 miler to the same race, you know, another year or two down the road, but certainly across courses. But, you know, you keep going back for more. You're 3/4 of the way to the Grand Slam now. What's the experience been like this year? You know, we'll start with Vermont and then get to Wasatch, since that was the more recent one. But, you know, how are 100 milers different to you now, you know, that you've done a couple of them and you know, you're more experienced, you've been on your feet, you know, maybe more what to expect from your body, even though the courses are obviously all different. But, you know, how is Leadville and that experience, translated to this year, or has it, or is it so far different that there is no comparison? How have this year's hundreds been, as opposed to the first one last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to compare. You know, I started out the year, I guess Vermont, I didn't feel terribly prepared for. I mean, I had been training hard, but you know, I had the whole bird strike thing in March, mm-hmm. and I got really sick, and that took a long time to recover from. And I felt like I was still kind of recovering from that, like still training for Vermont. And so, you know, you always are just like second, I feel like constantly we're always like second guessing our training a lot. I knew that a good portion of it was on road. I also knew that it was basically hill repeats for 100 miles.
It just sounds miserable. I mean, everything right. About hill repeats, miserable. 100 miles, right. Miserable.
Exactly. I knew that the weather was going to be very similar to here. Like, Vermont is, the weather is very similar to Wisconsin, where it's hot and like 1,000% humidity. Mm-hmm. The benefit, they don't have mosquitoes as many as us. So like bugs, not so much. But just like Wisconsin, they've also had a really wet spring. Mm. So that always adds in a factor as well. I mean, I took in some of the things that I learned about like trying to get as much sleep as I could, you know, what I really want in my drop bags, what kind of food really works well, what I would really want for support. So that helped. You know, it was, the trail sections were kind of hard, were kind of difficult, I guess. I had been battling a knee injury, you know, my kneecap kind of split, like slips out of place. So the trail sections were actually far and few in between, but they were really hard for me to go downhill on the trail, because in the woods there, they also have a lot of leaves and the leaves hid a lot of the rocks. So mm-hmm. you couldn't really kind of like go fast like you were on the road. And with my knee, it seemed to hurt more like going downhill. So I still did really well. I mean,
yeah,
had a good time.
Don't be modest. You crushed it.
Yeah. I mean, a sub 24 finish is great in any 100 miler. And, you know, I was really happy to get that. That was my B goal. I mean, my A goal was 22 hours. I think that if I hadn't had any issue, I could have definitely done that. I was definitely on pace for that for sure. My feet actually held up pretty well. I kind of trained shoes quite a bit. They hurt, but not to the point where I couldn't run anymore. So, that was good. I mean, it's so hard because like Wasatch is like fresh in my mind, and Vermont is there, and there were, and Vermont or Wasatch was such a much more challenging run than Vermont. I mean, I didn't cry in Vermont. Like, I didn't feel really emotionally kind of drained in that. I mean, it was a little bit more physically tough, and there were a couple moments where I just was like, I just need to sit here for like 15 minutes. Just like, let me just like chill for a second. And that was probably about mile 60. So you can kind of see it trying a little bit, you know, past that 50 mile mark or the hour mark, which was like, I think 9 hours in this one. So less time had passed, but more distance. So I think that it just, you know, it was just harder in a different way, I guess. And plus it wasn't as streamlined because it wasn't just Roger, my husband. He's usually just my single crew. So I had like also my daughter and I had friends who were there. So things were a little bit different, which can be good and bad. It can distract you or it could kind of throw you off. But I don't know. I think it was fine, okay. I guess.
Good, good. And then you said Wasatch was way hard. And I know we talked about this just the other day on our weekly call. But what was the Wasatch experience like for you, for those that haven't heard much about that race in the past?
It's hard to like look at some of the stuff and like even read my own blog post like without kind of crying just which is so weird, but I think that, you know, like my Instagram thing that when I posted the link, I just was like, it stripped me down for sure. And you know, I feel like it kind of just like stripped me and just like shook me really, really hard and then just was like, now go. Because it just, I was, one of the bigger things I remember about Vermont is how scared I was of Wasatch during Vermont. Like people were talking about it, you know, and I just was like, I don't even want to think about it. Like maybe I'm not even going to run it because my knee was hurting. And I was like, fuck, if my knee hurts like this, like I'm not even like, what if I can't even run Wasatch? You know, if I can't get this under control, like I'm never going to, I knew it was a almost entirely single track and very technical and, you know, not to mention in the mountains. So, you know, I was scared going in and, cause I hadn't had any time to train out there. You know, I felt like my training was not great. And, you know, the short time in between the two races. But from the get go of that race, I showed up and my legs didn't. You know, I mean, I think we've all probably experienced that where you train so hard and then your body just decides not to show up on race day. And that's something that you just really kind of crushes you, I think, because you walk in and I'm like, okay, here we go. The first couple miles. And then like that first couple steps climbing, I was like, oh, so this is how we're going to play it. Like in a climbing mountain race, I have no legs. So, and then to top it off, you know, the next 4.5 miles or like 4,300 feet of climbing. It's pretty steep. It's pretty rocky. You know, my body decided that it wanted to just throw up the entire way up. It wasn't digestive. It was like my head, I was sort of like dizzy. So I think it was the altitude, which, you know, we got out there like 48 hours ahead of, not even 48 hours, like 36 hours ahead of time. So I should have been good, but you know, thankfully in the race, it didn't happen again. I didn't have any other altitude symptoms. I mean, breathing was a little tough sometimes. Like I could tell, like even on shorter climbs, like my shortness of breath, you just kind of feel like you can't get a good breath. So I knew that. And I just, by mile 16 was like the first aid station, I was ready to quit. I sat down, I took my time, I ate like 3 Freezy Pops, like ate a bunch of watermelon, you know, I didn't even put sunscreen on because I was like, I'm going to quit at the next aid station, you know, like, And then I kept thinking, okay, like, well, Roger's at the mile, like 32 aid station. Like, I just have to get to him. Mm-hmm. Like, just have to get there. And I'm like, that's another like 6 hours before I get there. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And you're starting to see some of the views and how beautiful. And it was actually pretty breezy. So the smoke had cleared from all the wildfires. Mm-hmm. You could actually see, which was nice. And shortly after that aid station, I took a pee break in the, you know, the glorious toilets we have there, and came out and I met this person who was, you know, and of course, you know, on these 100-mile races, you just meet people and you just sort of like talk about your life story or who you are and what's happening. And like, sometimes you don't even catch their name. Mm-hmm. You don't even like, I guess that's not important. You know, like you guys are like suffering and doing the same exact thing. And you don't even have to say a word and that other person knows exactly how what you're feeling. So you just have this kind of like connection without even trying, just by being out there and doing the same thing and experiencing these same sucky climbs, and, you know, all the rock and stuff. And, you know, and he basically just said, like, I'm not going to let you quit. Let's just get to the next aid station. Let's just get to the next aid station. I had fallen, you know, at that point. I think it was just, I've never been in a race where my mind has gotten the best of me, because I really pride myself on being a strong person mentally. Like, I make a decision, I do something, I go forward with it. I don't let things get in my way. And I just kind of hammer through, you know, there's like no BS. And I've never had a race kind of take that away from me. And I think it was my own doing, because I was really frustrated with myself. One, that I was letting myself be, in my own words, you know, a freaking sissy about this. Like, I knew this was going to be hard. Like, I knew what was coming. Like, I shouldn't have been surprised. I shouldn't have been, you know, like being so whiny about it. And, you know, and I was frustrated with myself that, like, I knew I was a stronger climber than that. I knew I was better than that. And I just, no matter what I did, no matter amount of food I ate or how much I drank or anything, like, it wasn't going to bring my legs back that day. And I think that's what really, I let that self-doubt just kind of like creep in. And then it just sort of followed me all day. Every time, like, my pacers were like, you're doing great. Like, really, your pace is not good. No matter how many people we passed, you know, with one pacer, we passed like, you know, 20 or 30 people, you know, and moved up all these places and all this stuff, you know. And she's like, you're doing so good. And I was like, like, just poo-pooing it, you know. And like, no, really, like, I'm not just saying it. And like, oh my gosh, yay. And I'm like, like, we'd get to these aid stations and it would be like, okay, you know, I would talk to the other people sitting down and be like, I'm quitting at Brighton. Like, at Brighton, that's like mile 67. And that's kind of like the last place you can really quit with your crew. And I was telling them, I was like, I'm going to throw in the towel at Brighton. It's dark, you know, here we go. And they're like, no, don't make decisions in the dark. Once the sun comes up, you'll feel much better. Don't do it. My pacer is just like, no, you're not. Like, you're not quitting. So, yeah, I think, yes, it was the race itself, but I think a lot of it was myself also. Mm-hmm. So
there's so much there. I have to focus on the mental thing, at least for just a second, because that's, you know, long been my bugaboo, probably the entire time that I've been a runner, and certainly any time that I've been serious about trying to you know, reach a time goal or whatever the case might be. You know, anytime I've come up short, it's almost always been because my mind, you know, gives in and I kind of quit on myself at some point and, you know, allow myself to walk for just that. I'll just walk until the next, you know, whatever. And then the next, whatever turns into the next 3 miles and the time thing is all out the window. And for you to be somebody who's so often been strong mentally, and it almost sounds like, I mean, if I'm hearing you correctly, I mean, almost from the very beginning of that race, the mind was your mind was pretty much getting in your way the entire course of the race. Were there tricks, tactics, things like that mentally that you use to keep keep going? Was it the guy that you buddied up with and just wouldn't allow you to quit and then turn into your Pacers that kept you going? Like was there something within you that you were able to tap into mentally to keep going, or was it the external kind of factors that didn't give you much of a choice and forced you, almost for lack of a better way of saying it, to keep going when you were really struggling there?
It's so weird because you're like talking and I'm like tearing up for like no reason, just like even thinking about it. Like I'm just not like no particular thought, but you just like talking about it. Like I'm on the verge of crying, which is so weird. But like, I mean, it's kind of, you know, but I mean, I definitely credit, you know, that man guy, mm-hmm. like at the beginning, getting me through, you know, to the first like main aid station at Big Mountain, because I know if I have been by myself, I can't say 100% that I would have quit, mm-hmm. but it would have been a lot harder and I would have slowed down and I basically just kind of followed him blindly. I mm-hmm. just kind of tried to shut off my mind and not think too much about how much it sucked or how much I was hurting, you know, and he didn't really give me too many like sappy thing, like you're doing great, right. or you look awesome. I don't respond well to that. Like I'm more of a hard, like love type of person, like get your ass moving kind of person, not like, oh, one foot in front of you. No, don't give me that shit. Like I told my Pacers from the get-go, you say that stuff, I'm going to punch you. Like, don't say that stuff. Like, it's not going to work. So, you know, and he just kind of, we just found we had a lot of things in common and, you know, we just chatted a lot and I made that quite clear to him. Like, I don't think I would have made it. And then having my Pacers definitely helped. If I had tried to do that alone, I don't think that, you know, I think I would have been a lot closer to a cutoff for mm-hmm. sure, because they were just something to focus on ahead of me, like just to kind of like space out a little bit, just like watch their shoes, just watch their pack, just kind of like space out a little. I mean, I kind of had this running commentary in my head at one point that just was like, you know, trying to process why I was feeling the way that I was feeling. Like, why do you want to quit? Mm. Okay. Like you want to quit because it's hard. Well, you sign up for this stuff because it's hard.
Right.
Like if it was easy, everybody would do this. Like you knew it was going to be hard. If you quit because it's hard, you better just quit doing hundreds, because then your running is done, mm-hmm. because that's a shit ass reason to quit. And I'm not a quitter. And I just, you know, kind of kept saying that, like, I told my Pacers, I told my husband, I told, you know, told myself, like, the only way you're going to get me off that course, if I don't make a cutoff, or if I am like physically broken, like a bone is sticking out of my leg. Like if I break an arm or dislocate my shoulder, I can Killian that shit and run. Like, that's fine. But, you know, and then thinking about like saying that, like, I have to stick to that because that's true. Like I'm not a quitter and I've DNF'd only one race in my life because I was kind of injured and I knew if I walked it in, I wouldn't make the cutoff. So I might as well cut it short. And that followed me for a really long time. And if I DNF this race, I don't know, like that recovery would be worse.
Right.
Like that, the DNF like haunts you so much,
mm-hmm.
and especially to not even have a real reason,
right?
Like because it hurts or because it's hard is not a reason. And so I just kind of like told myself that, like, why are you know, like, just stick it out. Like it's, you know, it may not get better, it may not hurt less, just like get to that next aid station. And that's just kind of, that sort of helped me. Like every aid station that I got to, I was like, what does the next section look like?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and then they would tell you, and it's like 6 miles to the next aid station, and this is what it's going to look like. And that helped to break it up into those little sections and to know sort of what was coming. Because it's like, okay, there's 2 miles of climbing, and then there's about 2 miles of, you know, traversing, and then there's a downhill. So then it's like, okay, you do the 2 miles of climbing, and now you think to yourself, okay, there's 2 miles of just traversing, kind of like rolling. Okay, we're done with 2 miles. Now we get to go downhill.
Mm-hmm.
So breaking that up just really helped, I guess. I mean, there really aren't any other tricks or anything like that. It just kind of like was told myself to suck it up and just not like sit there and whine about it
mm-hmm.
to myself.
Yeah, and I've heard, and I'm sure you have too, you know, the idea of breaking it up, no matter what, you know, it's I think it probably makes a lot of sense in a 100-mile race to try to break it into chunks that are navigable, that you can navigate. There we go. Use an easier word. But you know, it's something that you can comprehend, you know, going, oh, I got 70 miles left to go. Like that's a hell of a lot of running. But if you go, all right, I got 6 miles to the next aid station. And then, you know, at that point, then you worry about the next 10-mile stretch or whatever the case might be, you know, and that works with any distance. And even if you're struggling at mile 16 of the marathon, thinking that you have 10 miles left, like that's still that can be daunting at that point. But if you go, you know what, get me to the next aid station, or get me to, you know, get me to mile 20. And then I'll only, you know, like just worry about the next mile, the next couple miles, you know, that can be a good strategy to help you get through some of those down areas, those parts where it struggles. And like you said earlier, that's kind of one of the things you like about these 100-mile races. So with all that in mind, and maybe, you know, the future is an impossible question to predict, but you know, looking into next year and beyond, is still going to keep trying to put a 100 or two on the calendar most years?
Yeah. I mean, I kept telling myself, like when I first started this run, you know, like in that first section where I was like, oh God, I'm going to quit. I remembered like saying out loud and to myself, like, oh my God, I am so happy I did not get into Western States and do the Grand Slam this year. Mm-hmm. Like I was not ready for that. In hindsight,
right.
You know, I thought I was, and I was like, oh yes, this is such a badass goal. Like I'm going to do this. Like there's not very many women like who do it. Like no woman completed it this year. Mm-hmm. Like that's still my goal to do that. But like, there's so many things I have to do that. And so, yes, I do. I'm going to put my name in Western States. I got two tickets. I mean, I got two ticket races. Mm-hmm. So I'll be in there for the second year. So I do have, you know, more than one ticket in there. So I will put my name in that in for that. If I'm going to enter the Grand Slam, I'm not sure, but like you said, I'm 3/4 of the way there. Mm-hmm. I've got three of them accomplished and I know what's coming. So maybe that's better that I know, you know, what to expect and kind of how to train and what I need to work on. So maybe that'll be better. But, right now, you know, I mean, that's just kind of what I'm thinking about. Western States is the first thing to like put mm-hmm. my name in, and then, you know, I don't think I'm going to race the rest of 2017. It's what, 6 days post, 5 days post. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's Friday. So I guess I was racing at this point last week. And I have some pretty, you know, big blisters on my heels, so I can't even put on real shoes yet. So I'm kind of taking advantage of this rest week, I'm mm-hmm. calling it, because I really have been training hard since like December. So it's kind of nice to take a little break and, maybe I'll do some shorter stuff. I don't know what's going to happen in the fall, right. But nothing crazy. But then 2018, you know, there's always some good winter ultras up here. So,
right. And, you know, taking a whole week off, that's probably okay. We both wear the coaching hat once in a while. And I think it's one of those where it's easy to tell the clients like, yeah, take a week, take 2 weeks, take a little bit of time, recover. And then for ourselves, it's like, God, I can't wait to get back out there. But if you can't put shoes on, that's a good excuse to force yourself to keep waiting a little bit longer.
Yeah, and it's so funny, like, the things that you notice, like, when you're not running. Like, I talked to my sister on the phone for 2.5 hours yesterday, and she was like, I like it when you're not running. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't think we've ever done that. Like, and it wasn't, and it was stupid. Like, we were Snapchatting each other while we were talking to each other. Like, it was, it was so stupid, but it was just like, okay, well, this is what you do. You know, the things that you notice, it's like, okay, my house is cleaner, like, my dog is really pissed because he's not getting any exercise. Like, you know, all my laundry is done. Like I'm eating ice cream in the middle of the day. Like it's just like, oh my gosh, especially when you come off like peak training, when mm-hmm. you're running like 30 miles a week, you know, or 30 hours a week,
right?
You know, and then you're like zero. You're like, oh my God, you have this like little withdrawal. Like, oh my, like I should be doing something else. You're like, well, if I can't really walk, I guess it's fine.
Yeah, I guess you've earned at least a few days of you know, midday ice cream and Snapchat conversations with the sister. I think that's going to be okay. So since we kind of brought in the coaching bit just a little bit, I mean, we can't not talk about that. When we did chat last time, I was like I said, I was listening to it again this morning just to kind of bring myself up to speed. And you it just kind of hinted when we got to the kind of the end of the conversation that, like, you know, I wouldn't mind starting to get into coaching. Like, kind of, I've been helping a few folks, and you, I think you said you were working with Girls on the Run, and you know, like, something that you enjoyed doing. But you know, in the time since then, obviously, it's become a bigger and bigger part of your life. You've got, I know, a good number of clients, and you actually, you know, most of your clients are local, so you run with them, and at least, you know, once in a while, depending on how the schedules go and all that different thing. But you know, getting into coaching, what has that been like for you? And maybe the better question, or the question I'd be more interested in getting here as we're getting kind of close to wrapping up today, how has becoming a coach and working with other runners, you know, how has that impacted your own running, or has it? I'm going to assume it has, because I know it has for myself, but how has that done that for you?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, coaching is going really, really well. I have a steady, good base of clients. I mean, that's my full-time job, you know, mm-hmm. is coaching. And I really, really love it. I have a competitive 5K runner. And I have, you know, people who are tackling their 100-mile trail distance and everybody in between. And, you know, it's really great. And you mentioned, you know, a lot of them are local, so I do run with them, you know, bi-weekly, usually, and sometimes more. And, you know, I would consider a lot of them friends, because, mm-hmm. you know, you learn a lot about them, and it really is challenging, for sure. And, you know, changing my running, like, as an ultra runner, it's pretty great, because sometimes I can stack my clients and run with like three people in a day, and I can get, you know, easily 20 miles with mm-hmm. a speed workout and a recovery run. So like, you know, it works out really, really great that way. And they're all really like responsive, and sometimes they run together, you know, without me, you know, and they've kind of created this own little kind of group within themselves, mm-hmm. which is really, really nice. And, you know, I have some clients, and I'm sure you do too, or anybody does, like, that running is truly solo for them. You know, they don't have a spouse, they don't have a partner, or they don't have one who's supportive of their running. So like, having somebody kind of physically there or in their corner all the time is really helpful. And I try to make it to every race I can. That's mm-hmm. I'll drive 4 hours just to spectate them at a race, because I might be the only person there who knows them. And I know, like, as a person, like, that means a lot. Like, when you're struggling through like your first 50-mile race and there's nobody there at the finish line for you, like, and then seeing somebody like that, you know, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, like, that can change anything. Or you push a little bit harder, or, you know, you try a little harder, or, you know, I mean, it's such an emotional thing as it is, running in general, and then pushing and doing a race that you've never done before, you know, having somebody there is really important. And, I kind of take pride in that. I know that they don't expect me to do that, but that's the expectation that I have on myself, mm-hmm. To be there for them in any way that I can, basically. And I just, you know, I stretch a little bit more because I tell them to do that. And I get challenged a lot of times. You know, I have a few clients who are just like, why are you asking me to do this? Mm-hmm. Or why are you doing this? And it really like challenges me to kind of pull out some of that knowledge. Like, this is why, you know, like, I'm glad you're asking me those questions. Like, thank you. That's, you know, you're not just blindly listening to me, which, you know, it's good, but now you know that there is a method right. to this. I'm not just like throwing some shit your way. Like, I am doing this, you know, there's a reason why. And so, yeah, it's been, we could always ask for more clients, you right, know, I was just going to say, like, I couldn't ask for anything more, but like more clients would be good, you know, but there's some exciting things happening. A lot of people are racing this weekend. Chicago's coming up. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, can only get better. I released the date for my camp. So that's, you know, coming up too. So it's just, yeah. It's great. I'm so glad that I just kind of sucked it up and pulled the trigger and did it. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes you just have to take that blind leap into something that you love doing.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's not always the easiest thing, kind of like running. I mean, we got so many parallels between running and all the other avenues of life sometimes, but you know, you stick with it and you start making progress and all of a sudden it like that, the progress becomes its own reward. And then it just continues to get better and better. And I know that's something that you've been experiencing and I have as well. And guys, if any of you are in kind of the Madison, Milwaukee, especially area, and you're looking for a really good coach that, you know, isn't just online and email and things like that, which is obviously what I do, but you know, I can't recommend looking into Nora enough. If that's something that might be interested in, you know, something that you might be interested in. So definitely check her stuff out. Another question for you, it's kind of along the coaching lines that I was almost brought up, you know, 30 minutes ago, but it just didn't quite fit with where we were at the time. But it's been continued to stay on my mind is like you were talking about with the 100 milers, with you know, preparing before and making sure you get enough sleep, making sure you're trying to do as much as you can before and as much things as you can control. For people that are listening that are maybe looking into doing their first 100 miler, or you know, it doesn't even have to be 100 mile. It could be anything that's really big and kind of daunting and like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe I'm doing a half marathon, or I can't believe I'm doing a 50 miler or a 100 miler, whatever the case might be. From your experience, what are some things that probably would work well across the board? I'm assuming making sure you get plenty of sleep beforehand is one of them. But what are some of the things that, you know, you can try to, you kind of just have to figure out. So like, you know, for those types of things, I'm thinking like nutrition, I'm thinking things like pacing strategy, things like that you can get all the advice that you want, but there's no substitute for kind of figuring out what works best for you, if that makes sense. So like, what are some things that are fairly universal for the longer distance races? And so what are some of the things that, as you found as a runner and as a coach, really kind of have to go, you know what, I can give you some advice, but you really just have to figure this out, you know, take the advice, but then figure out what ultimately works for you on your own, if that whole line of thought makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like the things you can control, like making sure that you're getting enough sleep, you know, if it's a destination race or somewhere where you're traveling, making sure that you're getting there, you know, with enough time to kind of get settled in. You know, if you live in the Midwest and it's altitude, you got to either get there 2 weeks or, you know, 48 hours and just kind of planning that stuff out. Nutrition is a big one. Hopefully by this point, if you're tackling a big long race like that, like you have your nutrition somewhat dialed in, you at least know what works for you. But I can say bring anything really, because the thing that you think that you're gonna want or the thing that you've been training with, you may only be able to take one bite and never eat it the entire race. Like, I love picky bars. I love them a lot. I train with them all the time. I can run a 50-mile race in them. I cannot get past the first 10 miles in a 100-miler with a picky bar. I plan to bring them. I plan to eat them every single time, and I can't. I just can't. And I don't know if it's because I'm going faster or I'm going longer and it's just too dense. I don't know what it is. No, it's just in that long of a race, I can't eat them. But in shorter stuff and in all my training, that's what I eat. So the thing that you may think that you can eat, you can't, you know, and just having a lot of like practicing with a lot of like liquid or like soft foods for longer stuff, especially like at altitude, I have found like, it's just hard to chew. It's like that effort is just too much. And I would say if you have a race, if you are going to do a big race where you have pacers, if you can, I would suggest doing a race with them ahead of time. Because you're going to see if you actually mesh together. Sometimes a best friend or a good friend is not a good pacer. Sometimes, you know, I mean, I don't know very many like marital couples that can run together and, you know, like it'd be a pleasant experience. Maybe you can, but sometimes having a complete stranger, sometimes having somebody who's kind of done a race before could be beneficial. I mean, I went into Wasatch without ever meeting my pacers. I met them both. Like, one was on Instagram and one was like through a friend of a friend. Like, they lived out there, so they didn't have to travel. And one of them knew the course really, really well. Like, but, and one didn't, but, you know, she trains on stuff like that. So, and they ended up being like the jackpot of pacers. Like, it was just, I couldn't have done any better, really. But that's something I would suggest is if you can, and try to find out, try to really think about what will work for you and what won't in terms of a pacer. Like I was just saying earlier, like, do you like quotes written on a postcard and read to you while you're running? Do you like the tough love, like make me do this sort of thing? Do you like, you know, them running in front of you or you running in front of them. Like those are kind of like small things that you don't really think about, but can make a huge difference. Like I said, I mean, at some point, like I just had to zone out and watch them run, like watch their feet move, like just so I could keep moving, basically. You know, if you're in front, you're going to slow down. So it's just like things like that. I would suggest just having that and packing and really kind of like researching like drop bags, because most like long races can have a good drop bag, and just making sure that you have socks and sunscreen and extra food basically in like any drop bag, unless you're doing a winter one.
Then you don't need the sunscreen.
Maybe not. Maybe you have some, you know, like Vaseline is like a wind protective or something, but stuff like that, because that can really make, like this in Wasatch, the last drop bag, my feet were hurting so bad and I knew I had socks in every single drop bag, and I got to that last drop bag and it was the wrong socks. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, let's shake the dirt out and rub my feet for a second and put on dirty socks. Like, that's sort of like soul crushing. So just double checking that kind of stuff and being prepared before you go in. Like, don't realize as you're packing your drop bags that you don't have enough pairs of socks. Mm-hmm. Like, find out how many drop bags there are and buy your socks in bulk on Amazon or something. You know, like, I think that's a huge, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's, you know, I think it's probably one of those things that kind of like I try to lead into with the question is like, you don't necessarily know until you know. So it's a good, you know, even whether you have a coach, whether you don't, whatever you're doing, like there's no shortage of people that have done a 100-mile race at some point. There's no shortage of people that have done a 50-mile race, whatever race you're preparing for that you don't know what to expect on, like reach out and ask some people. You know, runners are going to probably give you some advice, probably more advice than what you need, because I know I'm guilty of that often. You know, I'll tell you a dozen things when you only asked about one. But that way you kind of have an idea and you don't make some of those, maybe those same rookie mistakes, like not having enough pairs of socks, like not knowing how many drop bags you have. And so that you're not as prepared as you could be. Lead into it. So I think that's a lot of great advice, and thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. I can't tell you, especially when you have a really dirty race, how good a clean pair of socks feel. It's magic.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It doesn't sound like much until you're there, and then you realize, oh God, like what I would do for a clean pair of socks right now, and you're out of luck.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So as we're wrapping up, Nora, the end of the interview question that isn't always the same, but it's always kind of the same theme, the philosophical question. So something that's very much wide open, something that you can make it a short answer, you can make it a long answer, you can make it anything in between. You know, all length of answers are welcome here. At this point in your running career, which you know, again, if people go back and listen to the first episode, isn't really that long. It's 5 or 6 years that you've been in the sport, and you've done a lot in just 5 or 6 years. Why do you keep running at this point? You know, why put yourself through these 100-mile races? Why, you know, getting out there and running 20, 30 miles with your clients before 9 o'clock in the morning? You know, depending on how things stack up. Why are you as addicted to this sport as I am, and so many people listening to it, listen to our conversation are as well?
Okay. Once again, as you're talking, I'm like tearing up for like no reason. I swear it's like after race endorphins. I don't know. But like, you know, when somebody asked me kind of a similar question earlier this week, like, why do you do these like big, long races? They're like, I do it because, you know, I want to say I did it, you know, but why would you do it? And I was like, well, there's a little bit of that. I mean, we all kind of have this little like pride thing, you know, saying, oh, I did this race or I did that. But I mean, these big races are these long races. I guess I am just sort of like searching for something. I don't know what that something is yet, but I know that there's something there. And I think that, you know, I came pretty close at Wasatch for, you know, and maybe it's, you know, maybe it's my breaking point. Maybe it's the thing that's finally gonna just be too much. You know, I mean, I kind of fought my own mind, you know, physical stuff doesn't bother me too much. I mean, I did have a serious breakdown moment in Wasatch because of my feet. I mean, I haven't seen that many strangers watch me cry ever, I think, that much. And I'm pretty emotional. I cry a lot, clearly. But you know, I think it's just sort of, you find something that really speaks to you in whatever way that that is. I mean, I can't really say it's like a meditation, or it's like my, you know, the church of the long run, or, you know, like my me time, because I don't really see it like that. 'Cause some of my runs are like really angry. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like you just really need to just get out there and go fast and just like burn it out. And sometimes I go for a run and I don't feel any better when I get back, you know, I mean, I'm glad I went,
right.
But it's not that. I think it's like the physical moving my body endorphin, I guess, you know, and like these long stuff. I think kind of like the ultimate goal, I had a friend who attempted it this year at Run Rabbit Run. Unfortunately, he fell and kind of like tore his rotator cuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so he couldn't continue, but to do it unsupported, mm-hmm. like to do a 100-miler with no crew and no pacing, because I think that's sort of like the ultimate, like you're really stuck with yourself. And like that, I think, you know, maybe you're just trying to find yourself. Maybe you're just really trying to see what you really are like made of. Like, am I really as strong as I think I am? You know, because like I said, I sort of like pride myself in being mentally tough and not letting things get me down. And I sure was challenged mm-hmm. at Wasatch. And I really had a tough time. And like I said, I don't know if I would have actually quit if I had been by myself, but the chances probably were 50% higher mm-hmm. if I had been on my own. But I don't know. So I guess like long answer short is just sort of like, you know, just kind of searching for that breaking point, I guess.
Hmm. I love it. I feel like I've heard that a couple places along the line, whether it's on podcasts or in other places where I've talked to folks or read stories or whatever. And that's, I think that's very admirable. I think it's a tough thing I don't know if it's something that I can say that I do. So I'm in awe of those who, you know, that's one of their reasons, is to just see how far they can go. That's very impressive and inspiring to myself and hopefully to many others as well. So, again, guys, teambirdtraining.com. And especially if you're in the Madison, Milwaukee, Wisconsin area, and you're looking for a coach in person, definitely can't recommend Nora enough. So teambirdtraining.com has all the information, and there's blogs and stuff like that. So even if you're not local, you can check that out. And she does some virtual coaching as well. So check that all that good stuff out there, on the Instagram, on the Twitter at NCMB2323, and we'll have those things linked up, as well as a link back to our first chat if you want to check out more of Nora's backstory as well. All in the show notes for today's episode, disruns.com/468. So Nora, thank you. Thanks for making time. It's a pleasure to talk to you outside of our normal weekly conversation, so and get a little more in depth with what's going on with you. So thanks for taking the time today. Much appreciated, and obviously we'll be staying in touch, so can't wait to talk to you again, and thanks again for the time today.
Absolutely, no problem.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed catching up with Nora as much as I did. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was your takeaway? What was something that we talked about that made you stop and think for a minute? I love hearing about those things. And for me, I think there were a few things. Obviously, in this episode, we talked a lot about 100 milers. I mean, that was that pretty much dominated, you know, half or two thirds of the conversation. And you know, you may be like me, having no desire to run 100 milers, but hearing Nora's stories, I know that I was able to get some things from it that will help me, you know, in the marathon distance, will help me in the, you know, maybe some shorter ultras, some 50Ks, maybe eventually a 50 mile or something like that. And so I hope that you got some things that can help you as well, is I guess what I want to say. So my biggest takeaway was something we kind of talked about a couple times. It made an appearance a few times through the conversation, but certainly came up big there right at the end. And that was the importance of preparing and controlling the things that you can and really making sure to focus on those. And all of the external stuff, try not to let it take up too much mental space. Try not to worry and stress and fret too much about it. So, you know, making sure to obviously your preparations and your training leading up to the race and to the event, whatever the distance might be, is important. But, you know, when it gets to the actual crunch time, making sure you know all of the details, how to get to where the course is, you know, whether it's, again, whether it's a trail, whether it's a road race, whatever, you know, make sure you map out how to get there. Make sure you know what you're wearing. Make sure you get there a day early so you have time to you know, not panic in case you need to run to the store to get some extra supplies or to get some food or to get, you know, some socks because you forgot to pack socks or whatever the case might be. Just making sure to prepare and really control the things you can control. Don't overlook things. Don't think, oh, I've done this race before, I know what to expect. Like, prepare, especially if you're trying to race hard. But even if you're just trying to have fun, control the things you can control. Prepare well for the things that are within your control, because there's enough stuff that's outside of your control that you're just going to have to adapt to. And you don't want to be looking back on a situation after an event and go, God, I wish I would have done X, Y, and Z. Because those things were in your control and you just didn't do them. So, good thought for me, something that was a good reminder, something that I need to work on more in my races, certainly, is to be as prepared as possible and leave as few things to chance that I have the control to, you know, that I have the ability to control. And again, that comes down to mental preparation, that comes down to physical preparation, and that certainly also comes down to gear and fuel and all of those types of things that we talked about as well. So that was my takeaway. What about you? What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, you can head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/468, and leave a comment there. And don't forget, in the show notes, we have the links back to Nora's previous episode, which you can get that. It was episode 209. If you're looking for it in the podcast feed, you won't find that one. But she was in a best of episode not too long ago, somewhere in the four... Let me do the math here. Probably about the 430s, something in that range, 430, 440, something like that. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. Sorry. I'm not going to edit it back in either. So you can find it. It's a best of episode. There's three of them in a row, the first part of July of 2017. And you can find her first episode there. So with that, let's go ahead and put a bow on this thing. All right. Thank you guys for listening. I know this was a little bit longer, but it was a good chat, and I hope you enjoyed it. Take care of yourselves, and don't forget, DizRuns.com/audible. Get yourself a free audiobook, and please let me know what book that you decide to check out. I would love to hear what you're reading and possibly add it to my list as well. So that's it for today. Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and certainly look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care, guys.